It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's... Whoops, hold on. Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we are joined by Ray Duckworth. She is the new head of the Utah chapter of Black Lives Matter. And we're going to discuss her new role and what lies ahead for the movement going forward. Because people have this weird notion about BLM. They don't recognize it as a movement more than... They kind of see it as a group, right?
Yeah.
And, we want to start out by telling a little bit about yourself, but also kind of, if you don't mind, explaining the it is a movement rather than just an organization per se, if you could.
Yeah, it's a movement. And what that means, it's like a wave of knowledge in a sense, because just our organization is just like a thumbnail of trying to amplify the issues at hand, you know, just so we... It's so simple, but it's so broad at the same time, because it's like the movement is all of us. Every time you see us, we are the movement. We are living, breathing of the movement kind of thing.
The movement being there's not one aim, right? What are kind of the principles of the movement, if you could kind of explain that a bit?
You know, I always simply say justice, and it's on all forms. Of course, we want justice in the courthouse. We want justice on the street. We want prison reform. We want police reform. It's justice every time. Like, that's like the simplest way I can describe it.
Yeah.
Is justice, because it just breaks down to like this simple.
And by justice, I think one of the things I've learned in covering the movement for the last year and a half is that it's also about like justice in living. Like, they care about unsheltered issues. They care about education issues.
Yeah.
Anywhere there is inequality and...
And it's not just Black people, by the way.
There's inequality everywhere. Right. And so I think the movement, like, aids all of that.
Yeah.
It is Black Lives Matter because, you know, Black women and Black men are amplifying and are the big target from the movement. But once that, you know, once that blew up of, hey, there's this issue and it's targeting Black and brown bodies. And then it's, hey, this is also happening to Black and brown bodies in the unsheltered community. And look at this whole community and what they're experiencing. And then like, oh, look at these people, you know, who are suffering from substance abuse. Like this is happening. And so it's just like, we're recognizing all of the issues at hand like that. And I think it's like at the fall of the marginalized voices.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, I feel like it's similar to and, you know, kind of in conjunction with the old civil rights movement of the 60s and 50s. Right.
Yeah.
Because though it may have initially been born out of issues facing primarily the Black community, when you look at it, it is an overall, especially people who are marginalized. Back then, it was people who were Black or poor or Latino or minorities.
Migrant workers, and
Fred Hampton, I mean, if you watch the movie, right, Black Messiah, he shows that if you were poor and white and you were Latino—
You are oppressed,
you
too.
You were oppressed. You were us,
but yeah,
basically.
I think that's like where that whole thing happened of, like, the 60s. They were like, hey, this is a racial issue. Hey, this is a racial issue. And then it was— Oh, wow. They're trying to turn it into a classist issue, and they're trying to like tie these conformities or however you want to call it, these two ideas together. And so we're going to mush these two ideas together because, oh, well, we want Black people to hate poor white people, and we want poor white people to hate Black people, too.
Well, and at the heart of that is racism, right?
Yeah, always.
I grew up not well off. And the one thing you have when you're poor is you're still white. And that is automatically a level of privilege that Black people
do not
have.
But not always.
Yeah.
If you're poor and white and oppressed, You don't always
but
feel
that,
it.
But that's basically
I mean,
at
that
the
you
heart.
Have any privilege. You
no,
know what
no. I would have argued before the, you know, 5-6 years ago. You know this, Jason, because we were having these conversations led to this podcast. I was thinking I didn't have privilege, you know, and now I feel very differently about that. I told you it's one of the things that led me to stop saying women and minorities, right? Because women are, our issues are different. Now, does addressing one inequality in one thing, I think it's this idea, what I love about Black Lives Matter, what I loved about Martin Luther King and the civil rights issues there was a rising tide lifts all boats. If you care about justice, you care about it in every form and in any situation.
You can't
whoever
be picky.
It impacts. That's
and
right.
if it doesn't impact, so those issues at the border that where people are trying to claim asylum or there are problems there, them, but us addressing that with humanity and compassion and intelligence, that makes life better for everyone. Women can get paid less because there are people in this country who don't have documentation. And so they, I know because I've had, I have a relative who was undocumented and I know what happened to her. And it allows, everything is worse. So for me, a rising tide lifts all boats. What I love about the movement, and especially I'm so excited that you're going to be leading it now because I've interviewed, I think I actually met you at the very, very first protest that happened post George Floyd. It was up at the Capitol.
Oh,
yeah.
See.
Remember you were down, Jason was down at City Hall.
Yep.
And I met, I was just wandering around and talking to anybody who would talk to me. Some people were definitely not wanting to talk to the media. Some people were, give me some media attention. Yeah. and I bugged you and you had had an experience, you had personal experience with police violence. And that like stuck in my mind, but also what stuck in my mind was your level of compassion and intelligence that you brought to what that night was so emotionally charged. And I thought, I am not letting this woman's message and her voice get lost in this, the chaos of that night.
Thank you.
Okay, so before, now I wanted to ask you something, but I know it's going to make what you're doing right now worse. So I'm going to try to dial it back a little bit.
No, you're fine.
No, I'm with you. Believe me, I am, because I know where I'm going with this. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself, though? You say you grew up here in Utah.
I grew up in West Valley.
In West Valley.
Yes.
So explain to people what that means, because we people are listening to this, not just in Utah, but all over.
So West Valley is, when you think of Utah, well, when I think of Utah, I think of Salt Lake City, St. George, and West Valley, because those are the only three places that anybody I've ever talked to outside of the state know of.
St. George? People outside of Utah know St. George?
Tons of people.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know why, but they do know St. George. And so those are the three areas that, like, when I talk to people, they know. West Valley is, like, one of the biggest cities that we have in here.
It is. It's the second largest city in this
And
state.
It's minority-packed, so, like, I feel comfortable there. Like, I can walk around in West Valley and I don't feel like a sore thumb, you know, and that's always comforting in a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So how old are you?
I'm 30.
Oh, really? Hey, again, black don't crack.
Black don't crack.
I hear you.
I am here not cracking a bit.
There's no part of me that would have come up with 30.
I know.
Yeah. We also have
And we also have visiting with us.
A future civil rights leader, future politician, I say, future senator.
She's five, that's right. So what was your life like growing up? Can you talk a little bit about that? And I mean, where's you, both your parents black?
No, my mom is white, so I was confused half my life. I was like, yeah, because like, but the thing is, growing up, my mom, my mom knew racism was happening, you know? So when stuff would happen and like in middle school, I had a situation where I was in the officer's room and a girl tried to beat me up and I beat her up. Don't mess with me. So that's what happened, you know? And so I got into this fight and I felt bad because I don't like to fight. I understand I'm freakishly strong. I was bigger than this girl. I didn't want to fight her. But she like was really trying to get me. I got into the officer's room. And, you know, sitting there, I'm like intimidated anyways, because I know from like growing up, my older brother was 13 years old and got handcuffed and smacked it. And the cop smacked his head against the cop car.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, like this could happen to me now, you know, and my mom's gonna wait till you meet my mom. Like my mom's this tiny white lady, but she's going to rip you one because you have me in here, you know. So like that was like my first experience of like having that anxiety of, oh, man, like this I'm in a room with a cop right now. And like.
Yeah.
And I remember when my mom came and got me, I was like, Mom, I told my mom the truth. I always told her because I knew she'd have my back, you know. And if I told her that I felt something was racist, she'd totally have my back. She'd totally have my back because she can't argue with me about it because I would know.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know? So, but then you'd go into these other conversations where I can remember, like my grandparents telling me not to wear a bandana in my hair because I didn't want to look like a thug. Mm-hmm. You know, I
so could, these are your mom's parents.
Yes. And I could be 10 years old and trying not to look like a thug. So I always had that self-conscious of, ooh, I can't look like a thug. Mm-hmm. And then like when I got old enough to like, you know, I just roll out of bed and I put on whatever That's I feel right. like wearing. Yeah. Cause like, you know, you're, cause I can't look like a thug. I can't dress too promiscuous cause you know, that might tempt somebody, you know? So I have like all of these rules I was trying to follow forever. And then, I finally got to the point where I'm like, eh, no rules for me. Boom. No rules. So I don't have rules for myself.
When we come back, I want to continue, kind of in your evolution. And again, there's going to be some difficulty in talking about some of this stuff. However, yes. I know she's prepared to do this. We're talking today with Rae Duckworth. She is kind of now the person that's going to be, at least in Utah, leading the efforts of the local chapter of Black Lives Matter.
You can call me the operating chairperson.
The operating chairperson of the Utah chapter of BLM. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, back with Voices of Reason. Today, speaking with Rae Duckworth. She is the, explain that again. It's the...
operating chairperson.
Operating chairperson for the Utah chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement. And we're discussing kind of her role and just kind of her life and what she hopes to help in the coming days and in the coming months and years with this movement and what they hope to achieve. I know you mentioned that you locally, you grew up in a kind of a diverse area. Mm-hmm. How did you, okay.
I want to know how you got involved.
I moved around a lot.
Yeah, yeah, but how did you get involved in the movement? Like, did it come from your own personal experiences? I know one of the, that happened as an adult, but was that, that's not why, right?
So I didn't know that Lex had been here and doing what she had been doing.
Lex Scott was the longtime previous.
She's the founder, yeah.
She started it, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know she had been doing that for, I think I met her and it had been like 6 or almost 7 years or something like that. And then in 2019, February, I went out and watched her do her presentation. A woman named Jasmine hosted her, her, and they were doing this presentation and I was like, oh wow, there's a whole chapter here. That's awesome. I always wanted like, you know, do like pro-black things, like pro-black is not anti-white. And so like, I was always like thinking.
Which is a hard thing to get people to understand.
Yeah. And it's super hard. So I'm like, you know, I don't even want to try to explain it anymore. Just let me go hang out with black people. Like, you know, like just, I'm not going to explain it anymore. And then I remember I signed up for the newsletter in February and then we called her in September because my cousin got shot by Wellington police in September. On the
Where
10th.
Is Wellington?
Southern Utah in the middle of nowhere.
It's right outside. It's in Carbon County. So
yes, it's in Carbon
County. Right outside.
It's a pretty rural area.
Yeah, you drive through it between Price and Green River.
Right. Yeah, it's right far. Here. I know that. I know.
What was he doing down there?
Bobby Rae Duckworth.
Yeah, Bobby Rae. And so he, his mom lives down there. I know he had a brother down there. I think he had a couple of brothers, actually. He had two brothers down there who were his mother's children. And then he was dating someone who lived down there. I know when...
So he was mixed race, too?
Yes. Yeah.
But it's actually a really beautiful place to live, can I just say? Like, no, I know you're like, what is he doing down there, right?
It might be because, like, yeah, he loved to go. There was a fishing pond that was literally right by his house, and he could go there and just go fishing. Yeah, like, yeah, he yeah could not be bothered, kind of thing. And
yeah,
so that's always, you know, nice when you could go in a place outdoors, because Black people don't really like to go out. You see us getting called the cops on for, you know, bird
for
watching.
Being outdoors,
yeah, right, you know, yes. So like for him to have like that type of sanctuary is like, it's very cool to like think about. I wouldn't go there though, because of that whole yeah mood there is very different. And it's not very welcoming for anybody who is
so he
my
had
skin.
He had an interaction with police.
Yes, he did. So he was experiencing a mental health crisis. We have depression and anxiety like anybody else in our family, and we don't talk about it like most people don't. And he was going through a lot. I know he had gotten in a fight with his girlfriend possibly, and like he had lots of emotions going on. And in the body cam video, you see him crying. You see a grown man crying.
How old was he?
I think 25.
Okay.
Young. And you see a grown man crying, and he gets shot. He gets shot 6 or 7 times.
For having that circumstance. Okay, so obviously that literally hits close to home with you.
Yes.
And does that impact your desire to want to be involved in seeing the change actually happen, or be an impetus for making that happen?
Yeah, because my family deserves justice. Mm-hmm. Bobby is named after... So Bobby's my second cousin. Bobby's named after my first cousin, Big Bobby. And mm-hmm. We grew up with him. We used to go boating with him and things like that. And and so, sorry.
That's
yeah,
what you're
it was it was very close to home. And so after that happened, you know, I called Lex and I'm like, we need your help. Like, I don't even know what to do. Mm-hmm. So we asked for the body cam. We didn't get it when we wanted it, so we protested. Then they did some shady stuff where I think they like emailed it or something to his parents, and then they posted it on YouTube.
Gosh. Yeah.
So like, I got phone calls of, "Hey, we saw your cousin's."
They posted it on YouTube.
Yeah.
That is despicable.
Yeah. So
they're
I don't
not the
think
only ones.
It was
That's actually
like,
a common practice.
Yeah, I don't yeah think it was. I would think something like that would be, you know, discretion, like,
well, right,
to the
I mean,
family.
A, you wouldn't necessarily do it, but I certainly wouldn't do it before I gave the
and
family.
At least let the family know,
that's
hey,
right,
like, and make,
right,
like, hear from the family that they all watched it, you know, like, even, I'm not saying, oh, let me watch it, you know, let mom and dad, who, yes, you know, birthed this child, watch this video.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, would you want video of your kid being killed?
And
the world,
video
right?
was, it was, it was terrible. It's a white man walking through and explaining all of the actions and you know, justifying it. And
after I met you, I went and watched it.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And then after that, like, we went to the place and we looked at everything, and it's and like, as you know, as years go by, I learned that Bobby may have bared his testimony in front of this officer. Because this area is so small, so there may have been a chance where this officer was in a religious house of God with someone who he killed.
So that mean was he LDS?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just wanted
yeah
that those
For
are
those
kind of words that
yeah
it's important to that people understand. Bearing testimony is something very prevalent in
very,
the Church
in
of Jesus Christ of Latter-day
yeah
Saints,
yeah. Yeah.
And so in that way. It should have been a message to yeah the person who he was interacting with. If you're in Utah, you know what those words mean, and it's
so let me,
it makes it even more yeah it's sadder for that reason
yeah
knowing that this young man
that they may
was
have
having
known each other
these kinds of issues in front of you, and you'd have to be pretty dense not to understand what was happening with him, and then for him to then ask God for help, essentially, that was yeah.
My question as you're asking for help, what did you feel as a family seeking help and kind of dealing with this trauma? What did it help to have Black Lives Matter? Did
oh yeah.
It, okay, so and how? Like what did that help look like?
Oh man. So when that happens to you and you lose a family member to the state, you feel alone, or you feel like isolated but viewed, like you're, you know, if that makes sense, like where yeah. you're by yourself but everybody's watching you because they know what happened to your cousin, you know,
you're isolated and in a spotlight.
Yeah, yeah, and it, and it's worst. Really it's awkward sometimes, and it can be scary, it can be lonely, and like I said, like my family has mental health issues, like we talk about it a little bit better now, but we have depression and anxiety and things like that in our family. Mm-hmm. And so when you start that isolation and then, you know, you feel really alone, I knew that I could be like, hey Lex, like I feel like crap today, and she'd be like, all right, well, we're gonna go cop watching, you know, and like boom, I'm out of the house, I'm doing something. Even if we weren't doing anything, you know, civil rights related, like we would go and hang out at a pool or just something and like talk about like stuff, because that's one thing that we don't do is talk enough about like what's happening. And that's why we are where we are, because mm-hmm. we're not talking about the truths about what's happening.
And then what's it like to see other families have the same experience that you're having?
Kind of 1 minute there.
It sucks. It's like, it's so sucky, because it's, like I lost my cousin. I would never understand to lose a child that way, or a sibling that way, or just anything like that. And
a parent.
So, yeah. And so when I think about that, I'm like, wow, like one day, like someone's going to have mm-hmm. to tell like Brian Valencia's children, hey, like your dad got shot by police. Like, and, but then you expect the child to grow up and trust this entity. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's so, I feel like, it's so complex, it's heavy, and it's like I can just throw out like colorful terms all day, because it like it's just it makes me sick to honestly think about like Bernardo Palacios and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like that's terrible. Like we have got to do better, and we're late on doing better.
And these are all people whom in Utah and Salt Lake City have lost their lives during police interactions. It's a very sobering circumstance. When we come back, I want to talk about where the movement, where Ray hopes to take the movement in the years coming forward, because we know these incidents happen. We know injustice continues to happen. What can we do about it to help maybe resolve some of these issues? You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, speaking today with the new operating chairperson for the Utah chapter of Black Lives Matter, Ray Duckworth. And Ray, you know, look, as a fellow African-American person, I always say these suits of blackness we wear, they can be heavy. And I've been asked, you know, what's it like to be, you know, a black man, particularly in our society, and typically by, you know, a white person. And in this case, I did an interview on radio not long ago, and I don't want people to feel sorry for me mm-hmm. because this is my life. I don't wake up thinking, God, I hate this. You know, what I do is I know that I have to be strong for not just for myself, but for all the other people like me and who are marginalized, you know, because they got to know that there is something better as long as they keep forging ahead. And so I know for you, as a 30-year-old person, you may think that's old, but for those of us, I am glad for people like you, because you give me hope, because I can't keep doing this, right? You know, one day I'm going to be too old. Nobody's going to listen to me. So, but you say even for you, it's heavy.
Oh, yeah. It's so heavy. Like how you say we wear like black suits. Yeah. And, you know, I did the extra thing where I let my hair go natural, too. So that's like an extra chip on my shoulder. And it's not. Like when I get in a conversation about people and they always want to be like, oh, get over slavery and like you're feeling sorry for yourself. Like that's
get over history. I don't want to hear about George Washington or James Madison or Thomas
Jefferson.
Yeah,
then don't
either.
Be mad about the reconstruction of the terrible Confederate buildings
right.
and statues
let me
and things
those
like
down.
That.
Don't
yeah.
worry about it.
Yeah,
just
don't worry about it if you
it.
Want
that's
us
right.
to just forget about that's it, you right. know. But when they talk about that, like I don't ever want anybody to feel sorry for me. I want people to understand that I face obstacles and barriers. Like I just had a really good conversation with MCOT and like a group of them. There was Representation
MCOT?
Matters Utah was on that call too. So MCOT is, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's basically the team that's going to be responding to mental health crises
okay.
now. So eventually we'll get to the point where you're not calling 911 for mental health. You're calling a different 3-digit or, you know, a different short code or whatever. And so that's what we need. And so what got me into those conversations was, of course, like Bobby's story, because like they did all the right routes and that got him killed. And they weren't trained. We need trained people doing that job.
Mm-hmm. It's so, the Uni Mobile Crisis Outreach Team. And Uni is the state's
contractor
for mental health services.
Yeah, and there's, you know, pros and cons with Uni, as like when I have my increased conversations about Uni, they're like, oh, there's pros, there's cons. I get it. But like, get in there and let's evolve it.
Because since we know what the problems are, let's address it.
You know the cons. Okay, get in there and let's get the cons out. You know, like, that's just my MO. And so like, that's how it worked for me with talking to MCOT, is like, I'm letting them know, hey, like, this is this situation. What could have happened here? What would have been better here? And so like, when we talk about, I don't ever want anybody to feel sorry. I just want them to understand that there are these obstacles, there's barriers. And they come in different things. Like, an obstacle or a barrier could be how I present myself to somebody. Because they could be intimidated by me, or my hair, or like,
yeah, I think it's important though. I think the thing to remember, if you're not wearing the black suit of armor, is that you can do everything they tell you to do. Don't wear a hoodie, you know, have your hair be respectable or in some style that is approved by white people.
My language be respectable.
Yeah, language. Yeah. Oh, you talk so well. You know, all
or you
these
don't
things.
Talk. We can't be too intimidating with the words we use. You know, we have to say, soften it for people.
You can do all of those things and you can't be not black. And so the barrier remains. And that's the problem. And that's why I love people just be who they are and be, because I want to be who I am. And I think everyone wants that freedom. And I think we've done shows on this. There's plenty of evidence out there that if you do everything they tell you to do, you still face the barriers. The barriers are not gone.
That's why I got to the point in my life where I'm like,
yeah.
What are you gonna do? You know, I already know that. Like, I'm walking into a situation.
Yeah.
I'm walking into a situation black. I'm walking into a situation a black woman.
Yeah.
I'm walking into a situation with my hair probably this big.
Yeah.
And so that's just I already know I'm walking into that situation. So
yeah. In addition to like racial justice issues, I know there was like a you guys do like a summer camp with kids. They take black kids and I don't know, just basically love them up and build their confidence and give them experiences.
So
yeah. And
that was my first year.
Yeah. I mean, explain why that matters so much. Like, what is it like being the only black kid in a room or at a camp?
Let's not even talk about that. Let's talk about being a black kid in Utah. And when you come home, like when you come to school after everyone went on their cool summer vacations, and where did I go? My backyard.
Well, that was me too.
I did cool stuff. Like, we built a treehouse one year, so that was like really cool. But like when I think, that's what I think about when I think about kids camp is like that opportunity to be a black kid with black kids. I never ever got that. I was always the one black kid in class or the one black kid in the neighborhood, or like, cause like even there was a point where my family moved to like South Jordan area, and South Jordan
back then, especially, there was no black kids.
Oh yeah. That was the first time like we ran into like some people who had swastika tattoos on their face, and they asked mom if we were bugging her. And that happened in South Jordan. And I think I was like 14 years old.
For those who don't know, South Jordan's a pretty well-to-do area, actually. I'm a little surprised by that on the face thing, though.
Yes.
I recognize that in any of these places, they would have it in their hearts and they might be wearing it someplace else in their
bravery.
Bodies.
Bravery. But it's like that allowed bravery. So, because like I would, if I had Black Lives Matter tattooed on my face, like I don't think people would really talk to me.
What's crazy to me is like I've gone by places. I live in Sandy, which is just east of South Jordan. And in many ways, it's a little, parts of it are just as well to do as South Jordan. Let's be honest with that. However, there are some, you know, places closer to where the train is where it's pretty modest, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, I have seen outside of LDS church steakhouses, steak centers, I'm sorry. That is where these larger churches are. Those battle flags. I got pulled up to church on Sunday with the battle flag hanging off his Jeep.
When you say battle flag, it's the Confederate flag.
It's the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Because if I'm the person, and he came late, so the people who were at the church wouldn't see it until they came back outside.
Yeah. But the people driving by.
But he didn't care because he drove up there to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and I've also seen it in people's yards. I've taken I got a picture on my phone.
He usually sends them to us. There's like a group.
It's crazy that this kind of stuff happens.
But I think that's even more important, right? Yeah, that what you guys did for kids, it's not just about opportunity. Because there's lots of white kids that don't have opportunity to go on vacation. Didn't go on vacations either, but I didn't experience this isolation like you say.
If you didn't go ever think on about vacation, it. Yeah. You were able to go into your neighborhood and play with kids who looked like you, though.
Yeah. And I never thought about it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I think people don't understand about kids of color, especially in Utah, is you're always aware you're not white.
Yes.
You know?
I'm reminded.
Yeah. And if you forget for a minute, somebody will put you in your place. Somebody will remind you by saying something dumb like, can I touch your hair? Which that actually happened to an ESPN reporter named Sage Steele. And I don't know how much time we have in this segment, but I do want to get into some current events with you.
Okay.
We're at that 1 minute part.
We're at the 1 minute part. So we're not going to do that yet. We'll save that for the last bit. Couple more things on the to-do list for Black Lives Matter that you think people might be interested in helping with.
The big issues like police reform and like justice reform, those are always on the plate. We need to apply pressure always. We need to apply pressure to ensure Breonna Taylor gets justice. Mm-hmm. And right now, Salt Lake City has a civilian police review board. Mm-hmm. It's vacant. So I need people who are...
You mean vacant?
I mean, there's like nobody sitting on the board.
Oh, wow.
So I need people to get into the board who live in the districts so they can help review these cases and let's get justice or at least point out the flaws in these systems so we can correct them and get them evolved where they need to be.
Excellent. When we come back, I want to get into some other things as well. But Amy, we had this discussion offline. There are still people who don't understand their obtuseness and insensitivity. And again, this is a movement, right? BLM. And this is hopefully part of it is to provide education. So that people do find justice from the folks who inadvertently may be creating a hostile environment for them.
Yeah.
We'll be back with Ray Duckworth. I'm Jason Lee. She's Amy Donaldson. This is Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Voices of Reason. We are back with Ray Duckworth. She is the new operating chairperson for the Utah chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement.
That's a long title, sister.
It is. We only got a few more minutes left. This is the last segment. There's just so much
and
in the news.
I am dying
and we want to talk about. So Amy is dying to discuss Don't Touch My Hair.
I know.
Yeah, that, which is a great book, by the way, by Phoebe. So I have been sort of paying attention to this stuff with Sage Steele. I obviously was a huge fan of Jemele Hill. She's a black woman who said some.
Who are these people?
Jemele Hill is she was a sports reporter for a really long time. Anyway, she said some things. She
worked
for ESPN.
The Detroit Free Press.
Yeah, and she worked on ESPN and she said some things about Colin Kaepernick that they said were politically charged and she got suspended. Then she got told she was made to do a public apology and then she eventually got fired. They parted ways. But basically, you know, it wasn't working. So, but meanwhile, her white male counterparts were doing very similar things, but obviously not supportive of Colin Kaepernick. And similar action was not taken. So anyway, it was super. But now we have a black woman named Sage Steele, and we have a number of issues with ESPN. Just Google it if you want to know the many issues they've had with black women and women in general. But Sage Steele is doing an interview with former NFL quarterback Jay Cutler, and she says, among other things, that women who dress inappropriately need to expect it if they get harassment or assault, and that Obama shouldn't identify as black because he never knew his black father and he was raised by a white mother and grandmother. So what up? That's for you.
That's so ignorant to me because it's so.
Yeah, it's you, right?
But I had a conversation like that with too. What is that quarterback who got the MVP a couple years ago?
Lamar Jackson?
No.
Patrick Mahomes?
Mahomes.
Yeah.
So Mahomes got that.
Oh, he's mixed race too. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's very fair skinned. He's lighter than I am. He's lighter complex than I am. And
he's
he
like
has, I think he has like bluish green even eyes or something, like hazel or something.
Yeah. His hair is almost blondish.
Yeah. So I share that thinking, oh, that's so cool because he's the first black athlete to do that. That's so cool. I want my family to see that. I am going to share that. A white woman was not happy that I had shared that and said, you know, his mom is white. And I said, do you know that when cops pull us over, they don't ask us if our parents are white. They don't. They shoot us usually. Yeah. And then they ask later and then they don't care. Right. So like you're it's so ignorant.
One drop, baby. One drop.
And irrelevant to just think that. Like she's so silly. She can call me if she needs something.
Nothing. There were, and she also said some bad stuff about the vaccine. So she basically hit all the high points, all the stuff. And then
flushing her life away.
Yeah. Nobody said too much about it. And then she got suspended yesterday and they issued a thing saying we're having direct conversations with her. We love our employees to share their opinions, which is BS. But she's going to we're going to talk to her about it. So she's probably going to come back on the air.
She probably pulled the race card.
Well, I think here's
she probably said
things.
You can't do that to me because I'm black.
I always think, is an organization evolving? Right. That's my first question, because it's mostly run by white dudes. Or secondly, and this is the struggle I have with these things that keep coming up. And the second one is, I don't want people not to say what they think, even if it's dumb. I want to know that Kanye thinks slavery was a choice so people can know, like, what the situation is. Like,
I want to know why he learned that or who taught him that
or
like,
where that comes from, whatever. Course. I want to know. I want people.
Mike Conley thought it was a choice.
Not Mike Conley. Kanye West.
Don't listen to him.
I don't.
In all fairness, when I talk about Kanye West, I adored his old music.
Yes, everybody
does.
But
right now, he has a lot of mental health going on that he's not addressing or taking care of.
He's a prime example. I can't trash him.
I don't feel comfortable trashing him because I'm like, bro, I want to hug you more than anything.
And honestly, if you want to have the best piece written on Kanye, in my opinion, is Ta-Nehisi Coates' piece about why one black person doesn't represent
all
everybody.
Of us. We are
not
a monolith any more than one white person represents all the white people.
Yeah.
But back to the story.
So I guess my question to you in all of this is we see these kind of public debates and you're now in this position of, you know, you can have some influence over what media, you could be a voice, right? Like, do you feel some responsibility in those situations, or do you feel like these are just the same things that people have been hashing out and we're going to keep hashing them out on Twitter and Facebook and wherever, and in the media, because the media is very white.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a hard time with the media. Like, if they hit me up and they're like, hey, I want to interview you about this topic, and I'm like, yeah, I don't like what you said about Bobby 2 years ago, so no, I'm not going to interview with you. And then they're like, what do you mean? Like I hurt your feelings? Like, you're talking bad about my dead cousin on TV. Like,
yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
So, like, I've had, like, those type of run-ins and, like, those type of conversations where I've declined talking. I do, sometimes I feel responsible. Like, I need, like, oh, I can't believe this person would say this. I need to respond. But then sometimes that can be so draining on my own mental health to where I have to literally think, okay, this is the tiny circle of things I need to really get done, because this is where, like, promoting change and evolution is going to happen versus, like, ooh, this big giant spectrum of stuff is, like, going to be really, really hard to, like, nail. And a lot of times they don't even care about what I even have to say about, like, those big conversations, you know? A lot of times the big conversations, I'll send them to Lex because people still listen to her. Her TikTok is still on fire. Mm-hmm. And so, like, she addresses
those
things.
She doesn't mind sounding off on
those
things.
No, and people listen to her all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just share your video because, like, I agree with you on a lot of things, you know?
Yeah.
So.
See, these are the working mom realities.
Right.
Yes. I told Ray, bring your daughter.
Yeah,
right?
She goes everywhere I go most of the time.
Yeah. And actually, I love that about the movement. I've seen a lot of kids at the movement. I see parents. And it's for them.
The youth is, we are leaving the world for the youth. If they don't know why we're out here doing this, they're going to know what the media told them. And that's not usually true because the media was telling everybody that we were out in the street rioting.
Yeah.
And
I used to get that all the time. I wouldn't mind it as long as they're not violent, as if
the people in the movement were the ones perpetrating the violence.
Yeah, and that was so wild because, like, even, like, when I met you up at the Capitol, I remember there being a white man, like, they were being provoking.
Provocative, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So a white man is standing literally right here, his face, and he's calling the officer an effing B-word. And I'm like, I will take all of that if you are doing it this way.
Right, right.
You get your ass in front of
me. Right, 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 right.
You want to talk to him like that. That's
how courageous is that? Have a woman in front of you.
A black woman, let alone, you know, like, I'm like, literally, if you look at the stats of a black woman, like, Breonna Taylor, guys, like, she is not receiving a lick of justice, and that's just terrible. And so,
woman was sleeping in her own crib.
Yeah, and her, and you know what I hear about that is that the bullets that hit the neighbor's house received more justice than she
did, actually.
And that's just...
They got... restitution. They got a whole bunch of stuff going for themselves, but not the woman who actually got killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like not... That's why I get frustrated.
What advice do you have for white people who want to be involved in the movement? Because I have seen some good advice delivered from you, from Lex, and from other people in the movement.
It's not bleeding. Sorry.
By the way, her daughter is like, adorable.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Like, advice?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where, like... People think I'm controversial is when I say, you know, like, if white people are going to come to this movement, you need to think beyond an ally. And that's why we call it an accomplice. An ally will stand there and record George Floyd. An accomplice will go and get the officer
intervene.
Off. Like,
right,
there
yeah.
was the, I think it was a paramedic who walked over and said, no, I need to render aid, and told them repeatedly. That's more of an accomplice to me than the person recording, but the person who was recording, in all fairness, was a
woman.
Child.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that's how I like to put it.
A young
put
black
it,
woman, I yes, might add. So,
always.
Yeah.
Queens
yeah.
are always here.
That's
right.
And so that's where I put it out is the difference between, like, an ally and an accomplice is an ally is going to record and let people know, hey, this bad thing happened. But an accomplice is going to, you know, get in there. I saw another video of a man calling the police on a black man who was riding is it called a unicycle? Just a one wheel?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
An accomplice or an ally was recording it, but an accomplice got in between the man calling the police and let the guy on the one wheel bicycle get away.
Yeah.
That's an accomplice.
Mind your own business. Keep going.
Yeah. And you so like thing, in dude. These situations, yeah. like that's where I think I tell them, hey, we need an upgrade with ally. We need an upgrade with that.
If people want to find out more about you and the movement you're leading, where would they go?
The same website, blacklivesmatterutah.com. I still do the newsletters and things like that. You might hear from Lex here and there, because we're still friends. We still like, I still need her. She still needs me. Or you can do social media. There's Instagram. There's a Facebook. I'm not very good with Twitter, so don't go there. But yeah, there's and on the Instagram page and I think the Facebook right now, there's a link tree. And that's where you can go if you are interested in filling out those civilian review board vacant spots, mm-hmm. because there's mm-hmm. so many vacancies and we really need to fill them.
And there are things you guys do throughout the community that they can use volunteers and
help
with.
Yeah, we can always
with.
Use volunteers
yeah,
for
and
unsheltered work or event hosting and things like that. Yeah,
and I would also say they're not a monolith. What I love is that there are a lot of different perspectives. And once you get into the movement, you see that. And it's really, it's fun.
But
really.
It's also like, even if everyone has their own different perspective, we understand that we have to work together to get the end goal. Like,
absolutely.
No matter what, we understand, like, I've met so many, you know, different types of people out there. And I'm like, wow, you're like out here, like you're a dentist. Like, what are you doing? You know, like, and like, just like real, it's like really cool because you meet people who are like, no, I'm sorry. Like this is happening. And like, I'm realizing now. So now I'm just like, okay, now you're being an ally. Let's upgrade it to an accomplice now. So
thank you for being here. And thank you for your leadership and your strength. You're not alone.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right.
And we'd love to work with you in the future, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any of the places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil, try to be the voice of reason, and become an accomplice.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.